RadioInfluence.com.
They got him in the white trunks. He heard it.
Beautiful. Oh, God. That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the top. Whoa. Here's Lucas and Mitchell. And it's all over. It's all over. First round knockout. He's out. Rich Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
The calendar has turned over to August. I have made my way over to Orlando for the annual Association of Boxing Commissions and Combative Sports annual meeting. We've got a little bit of a special edition of the podcast this week as I am joined by two executive directors you're very familiar with, the man who runs the ABC, Mike Mazzulli, and the executive director of the California Commission, Andy Foster. Guys, I really appreciate you doing this. Obviously, this is a meeting that for a long time, the media just didn't care about, and I've talked about this. So for the combat sports fan, whether an MMA or boxing fan, what goes on over these next couple of days?
Well, we've spent the last year developing proposals. I've been working with the medical committee on the boxing proposal. We spent the last year doing that. I think it's fair to say the most substantial change in boxing, the championship level boxing, since the Ali Act passed.
At least 14-15 years.
Yeah.
I also think, we have a lot of great guests coming in. What we try to do is make it interesting, but make it educational. And that's our big thing. That's my big thing. The last 3 years, the ABC has never been so large. This is the 30th year, believe it or not. And Richard Herring from the WWE came in and he spoke, and Richard actually was one of the founding fathers of the ABC. He was saying how the first meeting of the ABC was 1988 and he had 6 or 7 commissioners. And he said to me today at lunch that all the other commissioners have died. They're all deceased except him. So yeah, it's pretty amazing where we've come from. I think the ABC is getting bigger and better. We had a great presentation from Debbie Chase about becoming more inclusive. In other words, having everyone belong to the ABC. And Jay, I know we've spoken to you. I've spoken to you in the past about this. And the first thing is we're discussing medicals, a medical database. And the amazing thing is, if fighters are out there listening, you go to the doctor, and the doctor gives you your medical, your physical. And we'll have a uniform physical. My guess, the physical will probably be something like California's and Mohegan's, because we're the most stringent. You say, hey, doc, can I have that physical after you see him? You take your phone out, you take a picture, you hit send, and it goes to the national database. What does that do? That does, if he fights at Mohegan, then a month later, he fights over at Andy's in California, and he can pull up the medical. So, we're looking to use technology to assist the ABC, and we're getting great response.
I mean, is that something where you're thinking about, like, there'll be an app or something where everyone can just log into, or is it just simply doctor takes a photo, sends it to you, and that's how it's going to work?
No, not the doctor. I don't know of any fighter, and Andy, you tell me this, any fighter that came to a weigh-in to see a doctor that doesn't have his phone in his hand, right? Every kid, anywhere from 19 to 35, uses a phone. So what you do is you take you go to the doctor, pre-fight physical, not necessarily the physical at the weigh-in, the pre-fight physical, or even the pre-fight EKG. MRI, you have the doctor fill out this form, you take the picture, it says clear to box, you snap it and you send it, and yeah, it's going to be an app. I don't know, we're discussing it, we're at the very beginning stages, but that's the first stage. The second stage is opening up the ABC to everybody. What will it cost? It'll cost you maybe $20-$30 a year as a fighter, as a trainer. We'll do some training online. We'll give a day for anyone that belongs to the ABC to come in here. And even, commentate. We'll even let you join, Jay. We'll even let you be a member. You come in here and you ask questions. You're a member. What else do you get? We'll figure it out as time goes on. But I look at the ABC like the National Football League. Everyone belongs to the National Football League, from trainers to doctors. So they track them. They want to know who they are. And I think that's where the ABC is headed towards. I'm looking forward to it.
I tell you, being in, you know, working in the NFL, I remember when we, the Bucks did training camp here in Orlando, and this is years ago, where Gatorade had this pill where they could just put, you know, the guys would intake it and they were able to see everything in their body. It was amazing. It amazes me how hot it gets in Orlando. I live in Tampa. It gets pretty hot. Over here, it is a different story. But, you know, obviously, biggest issues in MMA and boxing. We'll get into MMA because we know what that is. Andy, boxing. What is the biggest issue right now in the sport?
Well, I think it's the same one it is in MMA right now, weight cutting. I lost my Fresno main event about 3 weeks ago. On ESPN. Well, explain
that really quick, because it's a great relationship between Andy and I, because Danny O'Connor was a kid he lost. Danny O'Connor fought at my place.
Yeah, and he made 139.
He made 130. So he made weight in the 3 months before that.
Why wouldn't I thought he could have made 40? I mean, and it was a WBC fight, and to my knowledge, he passed the 30, and he passed the 7-day weigh-in. The day of the weigh-in in Fresno, he's at the hospital. Okay? He's at the hospital. So it's a problem. It's a big problem in mixed martial arts, a huge problem in mixed martial arts. It's a big problem in boxing. I've got 1 in 5 boxers not making 10%. They're gaining back more than 10% the next day. I got 1 in 4 MMA fighters gaining back more than 10% the next day. You know, there's lots of problems with boxing. You could say concussions. I can't. What do you want me to do about concussions? The sport's to get hit in the head. What do you want me to do? Okay. Here's what we can do. Every doctor on the universe says that being hydrated is good for your brain. Being dehydrated is bad for your brain. Well, it makes sense to me, and lots of doctors say that if you're dehydrated, that is a contributing factor to increased potential TBI. Well, how about let's be hydrated?
In MMA, I've always looked at the problem is, and I've said this, I think it's just a culture problem. And how do you change the culture and really it comes from wrestling. I mean, that's where it starts. And, you know, I thought it was very interesting. I know the last Bellator event, you put the weights out there. I think there was 2 or 3 fighters that were over that 10%.
Nine.
Oh, it's 9?
There were 9.
Wow, I forgot. I didn't remember being that many. I mean, and you've got a UFC card coming Saturday, and one of the guys that's on the card is Ricky Simon. I talked to him recently, and I go, what's your thoughts on fight night weights being, you know, released? Do you have any thoughts on it? He goes, I don't care. He's like, you know, it doesn't affect me. He goes, if my opponent comes in, you know, over that 10%, it is what it is. We're still going to fight. But is it – I do get the sense that there are some people in the management side that are kind of like, maybe don't want to necessarily send their fighters to California. Have you gotten that sense because of your 10-point plan?
Yep. And, you know, it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that provisions designed for the health and safety of athletes and to ensure fair competition would be restrictive into certain particular heavy weight cutters wanting to come to California. That's unfortunate. It's unfortunate for a lot of reasons. For one thing, I think it's a fair statement to say that many of these people are in the wrong weight class. Okay, many of these people are in the wrong weight class. Their management should advise them to move up. Their promoter should advise them to move up. Lots of people, they should move up themselves. These weight cuts, and this is what's crazy about it. We have study after study we keep doing in California. This drastic weight cut is not showing an increase in wins. Now, unfortunately, it's not showing a decrease either. It's a wash doing this. But it just doesn't – I just don't see – what are we doing? What are we as regulators allowing to happen? We sit there and allow this to happen. I am just at a loss. Let me tell you something, Jason. There is not one less person that is not going to come watch that fight if we move that fight up 5 pounds. They're not losing no money. They're not losing no ticket sales. Nobody's losing nothing. And every one of the contracts, every one of them says subject to commission approval. Every one of them says that. Well, the commission has the authority to move these fights up. So I'm at a loss on some of it. And it's a complicated issue that doesn't have to be complicated.
The thing is, and we can look at just the UFC as a classic example. There are several fighters who, Kelvin Gastelum, perfect example. Guy, you know, make 170 is not what's in his best health interest. Now, if there was a 175, maybe it's different, but he's at 185. And the guy's on the verge of challenging for a title. And there's so many cases of that. And I know, you know, you do a lot of stuff with Bellator, and we've seen some guys that have done that there as well. It's just, you know, when you put in the 10-point plan, and both you guys can talk about this, I mean, when you announced it, are you kind of on schedule where you were, or do you kind of feel like you wish you were farther along?
I have to tell you, when it comes to the second day weigh-ins for myself at Mohegan, and as you know, I also do overseas with Bellator. And just so you know, I regulate Bellator, and I bill them, and I just recently requested Bader and Mitrione to give me a drug test last week. So they just went and took care of it for me this week, you know, or last week. I'm waiting for the results. But with that said, I have had no problems with Bellator's fighters making weight. I had one kid named Griffin over in London, and the first time he missed weight, and I said to him, okay, shame on you. Second time, shame on me. I'll let this fight happen. Next day, he was heavy. Next time I get over there, TV fight, and the kid comes down, and he's walking through. This just drives me crazy, and Jay, you know how I am. I'm pretty passionate about this stuff. This kid's in a towel walking through the lobby to the weigh-in. Like, who does that? What manager allows this kid to act that way? First, to me, you're disrespecting the sport, right? And second of all, you look really stupid. And does Bellator really want to look that's having a fighter walk around in a towel? So he gets on the scale. He misses weight again. And I look at him, and I said, you're done. I said, we're going to allow this fight to happen. You were 2 pounds over. But next time I come over to London and you're fighting over in the UK, you're fighting at 175. No longer. No longer at 155. I don't care. You know what he said to me? He looked at me and said, thank God. And went and sat down with his towel over his legs in the corner and started drinking. I mean, like, who allows that to happen? And we talked about Till. I blame the coaches. That's ridiculous. It's a sad situation.
I mean, that was actually, you know, when I put it out there on social media that I was going to be talking to you, people brought up Darren Till, and everyone has seen that video. I don't think there's anyone in combat sports who hasn't seen it. Now he's fighting for a title. And, you know, there's part of you sits there and goes, you know, he missed weight by, you know, 3 pounds. There is no 1 pound allowance. And, you know, 4 pounds, no 1 pound allowance. I mean, how does a commission look at that? And more generally speaking, how do you look at that and say, I can license this guy at that weight class after what happened before? Because now you have evidence of what the weight cut was like.
Yeah, that fight's not happening in California, though.
Or it's not happening at Mohegan.
I mean, I this is just me talking. I look at the, you know, the promotion that's putting the fight on and going, you know, he's missed weight, I think, 2 or 3 times now. I mean, I have to imagine, generally speaking, when you see a fighter, you know, miss weight multiple times, that's got to, when that bout agreement comes to you for approval, that's got to be a question mark, right?
I go back to the Cyborg story, the stuff that was, and the Till thing. Who would allow your wife to get so dehydrated like that and keep pushing her? I don't understand the management. I don't understand is it really worth her life for her to cut that much? Think about if it was your wife and she was cutting that weight and you're sitting there pushing her along to do it. Or is your brother and Till's laying on this air mattress because he just fell off the damn treadmill and there were 7 guys walking around looking at him. Like, who does that? I mean, it's ridiculous.
But Jason, one thing that we have gathered from the 10-point plan, and it's something that I thought before that, but I wasn't sure of, there's not a lot of these guys that are not making weight that couldn't make the weight. What I mean is their frame is not so big or their composition is not in such a way that they couldn't make this. Now, I think Darren Till could make 170 safely. I think that. Okay. But it's going to take a lot of work on the like starting now, like now, the nutrition side. And I think there's got to be some efforts on that side. Not were you talking about Darren Till, but not just him, but for many of these guys, if they want to stay, because I can tell you this is what me and my doctors have talked about it, is we're starting to get a little bit more stringent with these notes of moving people up. Okay, we moved up two at the last Bellator that you're talking about. We had nine over. Now, the reason I'm able to tell you nine, but most of the ones in the nine were like somewhere between 10 and 12, and many of them were between 10 and 11. They just barely went over. So, for all intents and purposes, yeah. I mean, and they were okay. But these guys that come in 13, 14% or 15%. What, I don't know what Murad was. Murad went from, was it 170, 171 to 198, something like that. I mean, that's a big gain. I'm telling you this to say that I think that there needs to be some degree of focus on nutrition in this sport if they're going to fight in these classes. They're doing this through dehydration at the last minute. Yeah. You know it. I know it. Mike knows it. Everybody that's been around very long knows it. That's not a good way to do business.
You really think about it, and I've said this numerous times. You know, let's go back to boxing with these heavyweights that won championships at 52. Let's go back to Bernard Hopkins, who was a world champ, right? Walked around at 170, fought at 168. Well, I remember sitting down him having chicken one time, and he wasn't even training. So he's taking care of his body. So is there a correlation between taking care of your body and your length of your career? Absolutely there is. There's no doubt. Heavyweights don't have to cut weight. Is there a correlation between taking care of your cutting weight properly and lasting longer in your career? You betcha. Arturo Gatti, fine example. Never was an A-level fighter, right? Boy, he'd gain 18 pounds. At one HBO show, he gained 18 pounds in a 24-hour period. You know, and it's like he was never that fighter that was the elite fighter.
You know, one of the things I've always said, and there was an article recently on this where Kevin Lee talked about it, where he says, quote, everybody knows that this weight cutting thing is a problem, but nobody is coming up with a effing solution. Everybody is kind of waiting for someone to die, and I don't feel like that's the right thing to do. I think you have to take at least one step in the right direction and just see how it goes. There's really no downside to it. And the article he mentions exactly what you're doing. And that is something I have talked about for years, is I hope it doesn't get to this case. But my fear is that's what we're going to get to. I hate to say it, but that's why I kind of feel.
I think it's like Greg Serb said today. I think explaining a death in a ring or a cage, look, nobody wants that to happen, but that's explainable. Nobody wants it to happen. We try to keep it from happening, but it's explainable. I don't want to be trying to explain a death in a bathtub. I don't want to have to call somebody's parents. I don't want to have to... and I'm certain I wouldn't be the one to make the call, but you never know. I've talked to lots of people with these injuries.
But you'd be the one sitting in the hospital, staying there overnight to see if the kid's going to make it. Because that's how passionate we are for the sport.
And there's lots of people that I'm frustrated, and we're going to not just frustrated, we're going to take action about it and do things and see if we can keep pushing the bar a little bit forward. But this issue could be solved rather quickly. Okay. Drugs are hard to fix. You take labs with sophisticated equipment, with smart people, with stuff to catch people doping. That's hard. Concussions, I can't do a lot about other than getting people hydrated up, okay? This is low-hanging fruit. We're watching this happen. as we as a state or a tribe weigh them in. We're watching this. We're approving the fights at the weight. One of the changes we made at the database was to get the weight class on there. That used to not be on there. Believe it or not, that used to not be there. That's been helpful. But, you know, one thing the 10-point plan has done, and it's had its, you know, and part of it's like we had to take a shot in the dark and try to do something. It's not been successful in some respects, and it's been ultimately very successful in other respects, but the biggest thing that it's allowed me to do is it provides me a lot of information on where these people are at. And I've kind of used it, like, for this next UFC card and for that Bellator card before. We were just Skyping people. I mean, I know where a lot of people are at right now, you know, just because – and, I mean, it's fight week, so I should kind of have an idea now. But, I mean, I knew where they were at 2 weeks ago and stuff. And to see if they were coming down. And I think – I mean, I won't name which fighter, but one of the people in the staff and they're in the office is named Heather. And she called up one of the fighters, and I just happened to be around her thing when he answered. And he said, "First ring. Hey, Heather."
Yeah. Oh, I gotcha. Yeah.
He has apparently saved her number from CSAC in his phone.
You know, obviously, I get a lot of questions about weight cutting, but the next most popular question I get from fans, and a lot of it happens, you know, right at the beginning of a Bellator broadcast, beginning of a UFC broadcast, this state has or has not adopted the unified rules. And I give you guys a lot of credit for what you did, you know, a couple of years ago I call it evolving the game. And coming from a football world, every year the NFL is – How do we evolve the game?
Just came out with their 50 different, right? Just recently, yeah, new rules. So the rules just came out, NFL.
Yeah, every owner's meeting, they're voting on rule changes. And, you know, I'm at the point now since I'm about a week away from our first game, where I'm kind of reading up on, you know, what are the points of emphasis. As you know, it's been now, 2 years?
Yeah, it's no longer new rules. It's the rules.
Yeah. We still call it the new unified rules.
It's the rules. John spoke about that today.
Where do we kind of stand on that? I mean, obviously it's a state by state thing, but I have to imagine for both of you, it's kind of a little frustrating. And I've said this, the people that are hurt by this are the fighters, because you're going from one state where it's the new rules, and then you go to another state where it's not. And then I also have to imagine that makes it difficult on the officials, especially the referees.
You know, what amazes me is you have these rules that have been around for 2 years, okay? We had John speak, because John, at the end of the day, sits on the rules committee with Sean Wheelock. Today they spoke to see if there was anything that was any was anybody injured? Was there anything that was a problem with the new rules? There was nothing. They actually said it's just safer. The fighters want this. Now, I'm not, you know, at the end of the day, the reason why some of them have not adopted these rules, it's because it's the guy who's talking right now. It's because I won the election. I'm sorry. The truth's the truth. And Andy can concur with me. Listen, it's safer. These guys want these rule changes. If we want to be respected like the National Football League, we got to do this every year. I mean, we understand that it's going to take a while. All they have to do is go to the legislature and say anytime the ABC changes, we're going to accept the unified rules of the ABC. So at Mohegan, we accept the unified rules of the ABC. The ABC changes something, it's adopted immediately. Brian Dunn for Nebraska has that, I know for a fact. That anytime the rule sets are changed, because in the law it states unified rules of the ABC, he doesn't even have to worry about it, doesn't have to go back to the legislature. So everyone blames the legislature, they blame this, they blame that. No, I think it's because they don't want to deal with Mike Mazzulli.
I've said this. From the major promoters, whether it's in this case MMA, I think they could play a role in making sure those states. I've heard that Bellator went to various states that did not have the quote unquote rules of the unified rules of MMA, and they said we want them. And my understanding is I know Missouri, who has not adopted them. I believe for that last Bellator event, they did use the new unified rules of MMA. It's
yesterday they had them.
I feel bad for fighters.
Alvarez fight up in Cal.
Yeah, I know. When they were in Idaho a couple weeks ago, they had the unified rules. You know, obviously there was a little bit of controversy with the 12-6 elbows. You know, Mark Cotter's decision to you know, have him lose that position, which it kind of seems like Mark's stance on that is, hey, look, he was grabbing the fence before when he was defending a choke. When you have those situations happen, what do you tell your referees going into, you know, into that? I mean, obviously 12-6 elbows is kind of a little bit of a controversial subject.
I mean, I'll answer this, and Goddard did a great job. 12-6 elbows illegal. Any discussion. It doesn't matter if it hit him in the top of the head or his neck. And he stood him up, took the position away from Eddie, because Eddie, it was a foul. It was a foul. So he did a great job. I have no problem with that at all.
I mean, 12-6 elbows. I believe John McCarthy has talked about this. Is there any potential that we could see a change in that rule at some point?
Well, it's interesting because right now Jody McCormick from Alabama is doing a study on impact of 12-6 elbows. It won't be ready for this year, but he will address it next year to the body. So, you know, my thing is I always say it's always a perception thing, you know, and John, I recall sitting in that meeting where the unified rules were written, and there's a clavicle grab, and they wanted to make that illegal. And John was smiling, and he'll tell you it. He said, "I'll just let him have that because it doesn't really. No one's ever lost a fight because of a clavicle, or even kicking to the kidneys." And I just remember sitting there and John saying, "Yeah, okay, fine," you know, because he knew not to fight that. You know, there's back then in 2001, it was brand new. So, and we hadn't changed any of those rules until 2 years ago. Any of the fouls. We never, you know, so now we're addressing them. So, but when it comes to that north-south, it's going to be, we're looking at it right now, and we're doing it in an educational way. You know, we have a study going on. We'll give it to the ABC Medical Committee, which is Andy and Dr. Schwartz co-chairs it with them. And we'll go from there.
In terms of, I guess, another popular question I get about is kind of, you guys are the national commission, but there is other commissions out there. I mean, what would you say to the fight fan out there about where we kind of stand on that? Is that something that we could, maybe there's some change that gets made?
On the government level?
Yeah.
I can honestly say, and I state this very strongly, I work for a tribal commission, been there 24 years. I don't know what Andy's stance is on it, but I know my tribe wants nothing to do with federal oversight. Mm-hmm. Nothing to do. We regulate. I think I regulate better than Andy, but I know Andy thinks he regulates better than me. But you know what I mean? At the end of the day, I don't need them involved. Yeah. You know? Yeah, what do you think?
I'm not opposed to, I mean, if they decided to do something different, of giving the ABC a bit more authority as an organization. Like, I wouldn't be opposed to a recognition of the unified rules. Like, we have a recognition of ratings criteria in Section 11 of the Ali Act. Okay. But having said that, look, this is just me talking. It's not a position of the state, but I'm not in favor of, it's not just me that's not in favor of it. The United States Congress has said the proper regulators of boxing is state regulators, state and tribal regulators. Yeah, I believe that's the way it reads. Mm-hmm.
Of course, this is the MMA Report podcast. This week's podcast is presented by Nordic Track. Sometimes it's hard to find time to go to the gym. We've all got a busy schedule. Do you ever wish the gym would come to you? Well, Nordic Track is a product for you. They have a series of training equipment to give you amazing workouts in the convenience of your home, including treadmills, exercise bikes, and incline trainers. You can join high energy streamed workout any time of the day without stepping out of the door. Workouts are led by the world's top personal trainers to ensure you meet your fitness goal. And I have a special offer for my listeners of the MMA Report podcast. You get $75 off your Nordic Track purchase by visiting nordictrack.com/MMA report and using the offer code MMA Report. Again, visit nordictrack.com/MMA report. That's nordictrack.com/MMA report and use the offer code MMA report during checkout to save $75 off your purchase of Nordic Trek. Now, guys, the other major question that I get is drug testing. Obviously, we've over the past couple of years, we've seen what has happened in various situations. We've seen the UFC has brought in USADA. Mike has handled drug testing, for Bellator out of competition. From your stance, how has drug testing evolved over the years?
Well, I mean, I think it's evolved a lot. I mean, I think 5 years ago, maybe you knew, but 5 years ago, I didn't even know about like exactly what the T ratio meant. Like, you know, how it works and how you can cycle down and that type of thing. You know, the fact that we've had to learn all this because we've had to stay up on it, and then, you know, who would have known about the carbon isotope test 5 years ago and what you need?
I think 6 years ago.
Whatever.
No, what
is,
I'm saying is that those many years ago, 5, 6 years ago, we were just doing illegal substance. I was doing a 5-panel drug test, cocaine, you know, uppers, whatever. It was just 5. We didn't do steroids. We didn't do anything. And then what happened is Dr. Schwartz, my ringside physician, said, "Hey, we should do this panel." I leave it up to him. And now we do it all. And I think there's a problem out there, but it's nothing like weight, weight loss and dehydration. I think there's an issue, but we're catching them.
I concur. I mean, it's a problem. We're talking about it. Obviously, it's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's a problem. But our number of adverse findings, the WBC put up their number of adverse findings. USADA posts their number of adverse findings. I don't think – I can tell you this unequivocally. I don't think 90% of fighters are doping. I don't. Okay, and I've heard that number floated around before in the media. I don't think 50% are doping. I don't think 30% are doping. I think it's probably 10 or less. Mm-hmm. Okay, that are doping. Now, are there more doping at the higher levels of the game?
Or are they smarter? On
are
how
they smarter or both or right. whatever? Perhaps. But and if they are smarter, how do we find them?
Well, I think we find them by out of competition. I think.
Well, I mean that's part of it. But I mean, look at and I'm just. I won't go into that particular case, but. Sometimes these guys get – I mean, if you're getting caught in an in-competition test
– there's something wrong with you. There's real – you might as well just end – yeah, you might as well just quit your career because there's something – and we've caught them.
I've always said in competition – if you get caught in competition, that's – you got to look in the mirror and say, what are you doing here?
Like, who's training you if that happens?
Yeah, I mean, look, if it's marijuana, which I think that – I know, Mike, we have talked about this, where you look at so many states where, you know, if a guy has a medical marijuana card. Now, now the WADA levels now, I mean, if you're still testing above that, I've always taken, and I'm not any expert at this at all, but if you're testing above those limits, you literally have to be smoking like 48, 72 hours before a fight, which you got to kind of that point going, what are you doing?
Well, I got to tell you, there's numerous times I'd call a Bellator fighter up and, you know, I say, hey, I need a test. And they're like, commission. I'm like, yeah. He's like, you know, we're 8 months away from the fight and I don't drink. I'm like, okay. He's like, well, listen, I don't have a problem with it out of competition for marijuana because you live in Colorado, you live in California. But, geez, I remember 6 or 7 years ago, I had Newton that fought at Mohegan, and he popped for marijuana. I hit him for 5 G's. And, you know, Emmanuel Newton, was it Emmanuel Newton? The heavyweight, was that Emmanuel?
Newton.
And I popped him. And, you know, it was years ago. Nowadays, he's in California. He's got, you know, he's got a card. I mean, so it's really difficult to determine. So as long as you're not above the range, fight night, I'm okay with it. I don't even concern myself with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's you talk around the industry, people will say, you know, the use is at a high rate, and I do think there are a lot of guys who do take it for recovery purposes. I was talking to a fighter recently. He talked about CBD as training down in South Florida. He says, you know, I started researching it a couple of months ago, and you know, realized that was best for me. And he goes, I've been telling a lot of guys about it.
I tell you, it's interesting you say that because people are saying the same thing to me. A lot of fighters. The older, especially the older guys, you know, the guys that are, you know, at their tail end of their careers, and they're big names, and they're just, you know, but they have the card and it's accepted. What do you do in California? I'll be the interviewer. What do you do in California?
About
marijuana.
It's $100 fine. It's a rules violation.
It's a rule violation.
But it's $100 fine. No suspension.
But I think that's one of the things that, and kind of something you point out, I don't think there's a lot of fighters who, I think they think it's banned year round, you know, and don't realize that it's only in competition. And I think that there's sometimes, and, you know, maybe that's on the management of these fighters, maybe it's on the promotions of these fighters to kind of explain it a little better. You know, one of the questions I got is, Jonathan wanted to know what you guys thought about promoters outsourcing the regulatory process, in particular the drug testing, USADA, AVADA, and I know this has been a working thing over the past couple of years, but you know, where is that stance right now between an organization like VADA and USADA and, you know, a state or tribal commission?
I really believe that the industry's changing. The industry's changing, and USADA and VADA have a very good product. They have a very good product. They know what they're doing. Do I utilize them right now? No, I don't. I do it myself. My drug testing is the USADA drug testing. It goes out to the LA lab. It's done the right way. But, you know, there's some commissions that utilize USADA and VADA. I don't have a problem with it. We had a meeting on this many years ago in New York City. Remember, we were talking to USADA about it. And I said, I don't have a problem. You know, but at the end of the day, it's our suspension. You know, if I ask USADA, I've asked VADA a couple times to find some fighters in Brazil. And if they're positive, it's my suspension. You have all, and you'll testify, you'll go to, I mean, they have all the processes. Just like I use Quest Labs. And just like Quest Labs, but I have no problem with it. I think we have to change with the industry. I think there's some commissions that don't think it's necessary, and they're the ones that are being left behind.
Well, just to further that, we've got to really look into the two, because you mentioned USADA and VADA, and we'll take the first one, USADA. USADA is an approved collector in California by the commission. So a lot of people associate USADA just with UFC, but they certainly do other things. They just did the Robert Easter, Mikey Garcia fight, this past Saturday. We have control, just like Mike said, of the suspensions. It would be, you know, and I'm certainly talking on the boxing side with the UFC. That's a contractual issue when they suspend fighters, and I'm not totally clear on exactly how that all works. Having said that, with the VADA situation, the VADA side, VADA is the approved official collector for the WBC Clean Boxing Program. Okay, so it's important, I think, for your listeners, if they're interested in this subject, to understand that VADA works with a sanctioning organization to test the testing pool of the top 15 and whoever they add in there. Okay, there can be some more being added in there. So we get quite a few of those fights, and I deal with Dr. Goodman often about this, and we get a lot of this stuff. But with Dr. Goodman, it's a different situation than with USADA in the fact that when we had that situation where Salido fought, I want to say it's Vargas, but I certainly don't want to tell the wrong person because I don't want to look it up, but I think it might have been Vargas. Do you remember? Where one of them tested, it wasn't Salido, but it tested positive for clambuterol. Okay, but it was trace amounts or whatever. And Dr. Goodman called me and gave me the information. And she said, "Mr. Foster, this is a commission decision. I'm simply providing you this information. We're way far out from the fight." And I said, "Well, how many did he pass up until now?" And it was something like 4 or 5, I mean, some number. And so, you know, I got everybody on the phone and we made a decision. But in Dr. Goodman, I believe she participated in that call. And her line the entire time was, "This is a commission decision. I'm simply providing the information." And I thought that was a kind of an interesting thing, because your question here, you know, when they're potentially, or in control. The experience that I've had with VADA, which has been quite a bit with that case and with as much as we work with them, is Dr. Goodman's group yields entire total control to the commission. They are, in fact, just a collector. When USADA tests for boxing, they're just a collector. Because USADA is involved with the UFC as, like, their collector, I guess that's – I don't know what their official title is, contract. But they're a contractor, yeah. A collector. We don't feel like we lose control because we it's our suspension, it's our license, but they can also give a contractual suspension or something or another.
My issue with USADA, and this goes from the start, the thing I don't like about it is, while it has been good for the sport overall, is I wish it had been collectively bargained between the fighters and USADA and the UFC, instead of kind of the way it was all put down. Here it is. You got to sign this document. And there was issues there at the start. And I do like how transparent USADA is. I mean, it's, you can see when someone is tested. I mean, obviously everyone's looking at Brock Lesnar right now, how many times he's been tested. And, you know, and obviously he's still under suspension with Nevada, which you got to imagine that's where they're going to probably have that fight anyway. But that's always been my problem, is just, you know, the fighters, and I've said this, the fighters need to be more vocal than what they are.
We've actually gone so far in the ABC is our MMA registry. VADA supplies us with their suspensions.
USADA.
Yeah, USADA. Well, VADA is going to as well.
Okay.
But USADA and VADA supply us with their suspensions, and we place them on the MMA registry. Well, USADA, we place on the MMA registry, and we put them in blue. Okay, so you have suspensions that are in yellow for all the commissioners to see. Like, Andy suspends somebody, needs a CT scan, that's in yellow. We put USADA suspensions in blue, so we can use it as an educational tool. Fine example is Krokop, who was suspended by USADA many years ago for testosterone. He had a shot into his shoulder. And I utilized that when he was going to fight. And I requested a test from him, in-person test. And I did it. And it came back negative. Now he ended up not fighting. But it came back negative. But what that does, it gives me a tool to make sure I'm looking at this fight correctly. And this individual tested positive so many years ago, we have to test him. You know, so another one was Frank Mir. I hit him again. You know what I mean? So it's a great tool on the MMA registry to do that. But I don't have a problem with it. We have to move into the industry, and we got to change times. We're not back in 2005. You know, UFC having only 4 fights a year.
You know, and I think the other part of this, and it starts at a low level. Is, you know, but the funny, it's, you know, a lot of these commissions, they just can't afford it. You know, I hear where I live in Florida, it's on the bylaws that they just have to do a drug test if it's a title fight. You know, which way I take that is no one else is getting drug tested on the card. And that's just being honest about it. But, you know, that's where I always kind of look at it and I say, you know, is someone potentially before getting to a high level boxing or a high level MMA promotion, have they kind of used something to get there? And that's, you know, but I think we're changing. I think that, you know, people are realizing it, you know, and to me, it's out of competition. If you fail in competition drug test,
what are you doing? Yeah, I agree.
I mean,
we've had some. I've had three or four in the last couple of years, you know, and it's just you wonder what they're thinking.
I mean, I know we have talked and people have not, you know, maybe don't realize how much you have drug tested Bellator fighters. That's always been the thing with Bellator is, oh, you know, the juicers are going over there because they're not testing. And I mean, I know you've tested guys all around the world.
Yeah. I mean, and the nice thing, I'll tell you one thing that I do when I regulate Bellator, I regulate to the best of my ability. And, you know, if they ever have a problem with me, they can find another regulatory body. At this point, it doesn't really bother me. You know, I tell a story how I was headed over to the London fight, and I was got held up in Boston on a plane. And so I landed the next day over there, and I get an email from one of the Bellator reps asking me if they could put him on the scale. And my response to him is, yeah, put him on the scale, but I'll get back on the plane and go back home. You don't need me. And, oh, no, we'll wait for you. So, I mean, you know, the drug testing thing is a huge deal, and I spend a lot of money to drug test these kids out of competition.
You know, mentioning about you not getting, you know, a lot of publicity about that, one of the things that I know you are very big on, and there's going to be here at the ABC meeting, the retired fund for retired fighters, and I know you're giving away $10,000. You know, kind of talk about how this came about. I mean, I know the story, but for everyone else, sir, how did you decide, you know, and how to with the charitable fund?
Well, you know, it's really interesting because when we got elected, and I say we because our board of directors is amazing, and I wouldn't be able to have done this without them. But when we got elected, we looked at the bylaws, and the bylaws stated that the ABC from the very beginning, when it was formed, needed to set up a charitable fund for fighters. That was mandated by the federal government, and that was in our bylaws. And so I said, well, how do we do this? Like, how do we set this up? So Lydia and I sat down and, you know, we're a 501c3 from the ABC. We never were before, ever. You know, we have a tax-exempt number. So, you know, I said, how do we proceed? So I just went around and we started just handing the hats out at conventions. And all of a sudden we had $3,000 in it last year. I said, that's great, you know. And then we gave away $3,000 worth of gifts. Two people that want to say it, anonymous, and another fighter, boxing guy named Peter Cardona, gave him $1,000. Now you rewind, I don't know, 10 years or so, and I retired Pito because he's having problems with his head. He was a great champ, you know, great kid, and he wouldn't talk to me for 3 years. Like, he was so mad at me. And then one day he called me up and said, hey, Kamish, I need a neurologist. I don't know what's going on with me. So I hooked him up with Dr. Alessi. He's seen Dr. Leslie ever since he called me. So, you know, we have a committee. Dan Gustafson sits on it. John McCarthy sits on it. John English from New Hampshire sits on it. Lydia sits on it. So we request an application. You go online, you request funds. And Pito did that. And he was at the convention, and we gave him a $1,000 check. Well, we gave it to his mother, who oversees his finances. And the kids stood up there and said, hey, Kamish, you saved my life. You know, this will go a long way. I appreciate it. So with that, it just kind of compounded. Like, we have casino night tonight. We're giving a $5,000 to Franco. Unbelievable story. If you go to YouTube and plug in 2018 convention, you can listen to his story. It was amazing. It was like, actually, the body stood up and gave him a standing ovation because that's how crazy it was. I mean, this kid went through hell and high water to get back to where he is. And then we're giving $5,000 to Tim Haig, who, as we all know, passed away, ex-UFC fighter. We're going to give it to his son. We're going to put it in his in a bond so when he matures at 18 or 21, he can have it to go to college. You know, and I hope I can give him $5,000 a year. I mean, so, you know, we're all doing the right thing, and it's all about the – at the end of the day, it's about the fighters. I think that what Andy and I always said, he was a fighter. And I got some pictures, too. I'll send you. It's pretty funny. He was a fighter. You know what I mean? So he understands it, you know? So,
I mean, Andy, have you ever had to have that conversation with a fighter of, like, you know, I'm not going to license you anymore?
Sure.
Is that one of the hardest conversations to have as a regulator?
No.
Is it a short conversation? Or do you get a lot of fight back from the fighter?
I think one of the hardest conversations that you've is when you have an injured fighter. That's not. I mean, I guess they're different conversations, but I mean, it's been, you know, it's not the best feeling in the world to be. Not that I'm no source of comfort for nobody, but, I mean, the girlfriend or the wife or whatever are kind of looking to me when the ambulance goes away. There's been a few times where I've said, okay, now this is what you do. Here's my card. If you got any problems, you can give me a call, you know, and then following up with my doctors who I sent over there, whatever, making sure that they, you know. Look, those kind of conversations are – more difficult because oftentimes there's this not some surprise for this fighter when we have to say, listen, you need to think about it doing something else, because there's been run-ups, there's been saying, look, you've lost your last nine, okay, you've been stopped four of your last nine, I mean, what are you doing? And then they lose again, and then they lose again, or if they get stopped again, say, listen, I can't license you anymore.
That's one of the things, and you see this on the local scene, where you see a guy who just has completely upside down record. You know, maybe he's got 75 fights and he's only got 20 wins. And I think from the outside looking in, people look at that and say, how is he still getting licensed? I mean, what would you say to those people? I mean, is it?
I think you have to look at the matches and the match. Who is he fighting? I think I can speak for Andy on this one. You're not going to see a fighter like that fight in my jurisdiction. It's just not going to happen. I mean, my thing is six losses, and I got a major problem. Six in a row. But don't get me wrong. I had one kid recently who was 0-2, who just knocked out a kid that was 3-1. And the problem was, a kid that 3-1 had a soft padded record. You know, he wasn't fighting the killer from Philly like this kid was. So, I mean, and this is in boxing. So, I mean, you got to really look at the matchmaking.
Well, we had the kid the other day in Stockton a week or two ago, and I approved that fight. And I wrote my notes to my referees. This guy can box. Yeah. He's better than his record suggests. He's not. I don't know if box is exactly the right word.
He can fight.
He can hit really hard. Like, and there are guys like that who are not the slickest boxer, but I mean can hit like a truck.
Come right at you.
And so I approved Jared Fenderson versus Madera. And Madera was like 10-1. And Fenderson was maybe 2-6 or 2-7, something like that. Okay, and you know, much like I thought it was, when Madera was just out boxing, just pow pow pow. I mean, just working him. One had won every round.
Yeah.
And I said to my lead inspector, I said to Mike Guzman, I said, if one of them punches Fenderson throws hits him, it's going to change this. Well, it did. And you know, look, I mean, you know, whether Madera should have got, you know, the benefit of the doubt, I don't think so. I think he was out. He beat the count, kinda, but then the ref called it up, but he was wobbly. He was real wobbly. And those punches Fenderson throws are real hard. See, it's like Christy Martin said today. She came to our meeting, and that was the most interesting thing that we did today as far as with the Christy Martin thing, because she had a lot of good questions, questions that I was pleased that she was answering. She's turned into a promoter, you know. And she was asking things that, I mean, me and Mike just talk about like it's normal, like normal stuff.
Yeah.
And she didn't know the answers to some of this stuff or had perhaps different information. And she was saying, well, they don't even look at my guys, or they don't, you know, you can't just look at the records. And I mean, that was some of the things.
Oh, yeah, talking about contracts. She's like, I have a contract, and all of a sudden the fighter's going to go somewhere else with for another fight because he's going to make more money. But my contract's already in with the commission. Well, we call the fighter up and say, listen, if you don't adhere to this contract and you're going to wait, we'll suspend you and won't fight it either. But, you know, that's we're there to educate some of these commissioners that are new that don't understand that. I think the biggest problem is we've been around so long, and you have these commissioners that come in, you know, it's a recycling door. They just keep coming. You know, the governor leaves, somebody else comes in. So we have to start all over with these guys. So it's difficult. But at the end of the day, like you said, a lot of this questions she had, we could answer in minutes. You know, it's
yeah, it was just – it was – I got a lot out of it because for somebody that high level in boxing, and I mean, she fought at the highest levels of boxing.
I mean, she was it for female boxing in the 90s.
You know, she had legitimate questions and legitimate concerns that she was voicing to the membership. I was surprised. Yeah. I took a lot of notes, and I like tried to. And I'm going to have some sidebar conversations with her, because you know, I mean, I think there's ways that,
like the matchmaking. She said, "Listen, I got a kid that's 2-6 fighting a kid that's 3-1, but the 2-6 kid can punch." And you know, she's a fox. But you have one person that's reviewing and saying no because they're just looking at the records. Now, if that happened with me, I'd pick up the phone, and if the person fought in California, say, Andy, who's this kid? You remember him? And he'd remember him. So, they just have to understand that matchmaking isn't that easy. Like, you just don't clear a fight by their records. You know what I mean?
Is it a rarity that a newer promoter, you know, contacts either one of you about the proper way to put on a fight card?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when we license somebody, I have a sit down. I mean, certainly if they're in Northern California, you don't get a lot of. We have new ones, of course. We have new promoters, but the promoters in California tend to be high volume promoters. They're experienced and they throw out a lot of events a year.
But also, you got to understand. I mean, promoters. It maybe if everyone becomes members of the ABC, it would be helpful. So these promoters, these young promoters, can come in and ask these questions to the body. But we answer the phone any time of the day. You know that, Jay. You know, and Andy does too. It's we live this sport. I mean, this is what we live, and this we make a living on it. So we want these promoters to flourish.
Yeah, it's but speaking of boxing, bare knuckle boxing has become a thing here recently. Wyoming sanctioned it. They had an event a month and a half ago. Mississippi just put their said they're approving it. What's your thoughts of bare knuckle boxing? Is that something that's even come on your radar at this point, where someone has reached out to you and says we want to do an event in California or at Mohegan?
I had Cohen call me. Cohen? Does that sound right? He was in New Jersey, and he said, "I'm coming up to talk to you." And I said, "About what?" He said, "About bare knuckle boxing." And I said, "Don't waste your time at this point." I said, "You know, it's too early for me to make a decision on that. You know, do I like it? I don't like it. What I don't like about it the most is they're recycling fighters. They're recycling fighters with names, trying to sell tickets, and somebody's going to get hurt. I believe that. You know, you got what Rodriguez fought. Baroni's supposed to be fighting coming up. I mean, these kids that I respect that fought at Mohegan under UFC in the early years of 2005 and 6, and now they're bare knuckle boxing. And I don't know. I it won't happen at Mohegan anytime soon.
Yeah, it's not happening in California.
I mean, I run marketing for a restaurant group, and one of our properties shows MMA and boxing. And I can't imagine me going to my owner and saying, "Let's show this."
It's really cheap, I think, right? It's like $10.
Well, for when you're a commercial, you're paying much, much more.
Okay.
You know, that $60 pay-per-view is costing us a lot more money.
Don't you think it's kind of like a train wreck, right? Everyone wants to see it. But
I look at it and say, if that family of four walks in, just have dinner on a Saturday night, they're probably walking out the door.
Oh, they see. Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just, you know, boxing, MMA, it's fine. You know, but I just, it's, combat sports is a niche audience. And like that to me is a very extreme niche of people that are into that. But can you see 25 plus states approving it?
No.
I mean, are you surprised that two states have?
Yes.
You are?
I am.
I'm not. It won't happen in Mohegan unless the council says we got to do it. I'll be like, really? But I'm not surprised. I'm not.
So we're here on a Monday afternoon. What is the rest of this week for the ABC of what's going to go on?
Oh, we got some great stuff. Tomorrow is going to be a very, very interesting. This is when it's the meat and potatoes tomorrow. We're talking about the rating criteria. And that's, like we were saying, that's the biggest thing in 15, 16 years when it comes to the Muhammad Ali Act. Second day weigh-ins. We have the rules committee for MMA. Really interesting was, and this is kind of a funny story, the rules committee comes to us for MMA and says we'd like to go to a scorecard after half the rounds are complete in all fights. So I said, okay, I'll vest it with the board of directors, and if we, at that point, after the board of directors vote on it, we'll take it to the floor and we'll ask the body. Well, the board of directors said, at this point, with the unified rules that are present in some of these states that aren't using it, it's not a good time to do that. So, you know, I basically said to the rules committee, you know, no, I don't, at this point, we're not going to, like the 12-6 elbows, they really want to do that. I said, it's just not a good time at this point to do it. Not that I don't believe in either of them, and we're going to do that study down in Alabama on the 12-6 elbows. But I said, let's just hold off on it. So, wouldn't you know, and of course, you know, John sits on the rules committee, and he calls Andy up and says, well, you know, a little heated, would you say? Or just, no, just you know, say, what about the 1 and 2 round fights? And I never thought of the 1 and 2 round fights, and it happens. So,
but as long as there's not a regulation change.
Right, so it's not a regulation change, it's just a recommendation.
It's just a recommendation for 1 and 2 round that nobody – I mean, there are some people that do them, of course, but for the tournament format specifically, I think that's a fair
statement. Yeah, so you go to the scorecards after 1 and 2 round.
There are recommendations because we're getting into this and people never have thought about it. But I told John, and I'll tell your audience or whatever, we haven't got – the unified rules adopted across the entire country yet. I'm not going to support going back and changing one additional rule until that's adopted across this country. Mm. We're going to confuse fighters some more? Is that what the goal is? Of course that's not the goal. But until we get, I mean, there's some fairly big jurisdictions. New Jersey comes to mind, Illinois.
Texas.
Well, Texas will do it.
Yeah,
they're in
a process.
I mean,
there's
a few
Missouri.
More, maybe. Yeah, I mean, these are not insignificant places. These got big metropolitan areas, big places, and they've not adopted the unified rules that the ABC has passed. Yeah, we're not going to change more rules.
Nevada.
They're in the process.
Andy's a little more patient than I am. Yeah.
Well, I think they. I mean,
no, they are in the
I
process.
Think, yeah.
They're in the process. You know, I don't know how long the process is going to take, but they're in the process.
And it's same, hard to change rules.
Same Texas. You know, Big Greg down there, great, love him. He's in the process. So.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I think where a lot of fans just don't understand. It's not like some of these states they just can't change it. You know, I know Texas. It's been a long process, and I just, as I've said earlier, just for me, it's the fighters. They're the ones that ultimately are being hurt by it.
And that's 100%. We say that all the time. You know what I mean? It's the fighters. It's the fighters that are affected. And at the end of the day, without the fighters, we wouldn't have jobs.
And, like, I wonder about the referee. I mean, you know, how can they not think of, okay, hey, I was reffing last night in a state that's got the current unified rules, but then, you know, the next time I'm in a state that doesn't. I mean, that's why I always wonder of how do they – kind of remember that in their mind of like, hey, it's the current rules or the old rules.
Yeah. And what about the hybrids? You were saying Missouri does some of them, but not all of them or something. That's like, now you're really getting crazy. Now it's really crazy.
It's crazy. But guys, I really do appreciate this. Of course, we're always interested to see what's going on in the regulatory side of the sport. Of course, you can always check out this podcast, radioinfluence.com, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Google Play. Come up later on this week, I will have a preview show for Saturday's UFC 227. We'll get you ready for the two title fights that will be on pay-per-view. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which you can hear every Wednesday morning on radioinfluence.com.
This is a Crush Performance Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Joining us right now to dig a little deeper and explain a little bit more of the wealth management in professional sports is Bob McKee, Managing Director of RBC Sports Wealth Management on the professional division.
Planning. It's so important that the foundations are set at the beginning to help the young athletes and their parents and because for many, they've never seen these dollars before, and you're quite correct. The dollars seem to be going up year after year to very large amounts, and it's overwhelming. So getting a grasp right at the very beginning is so important there, and we like to look at it that, before the first contract is even signed, that we have those discussions, because there's so many planning opportunities that start right from the get-go.
Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crichel, can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.